being here to share your knowledge and experiences, and to explore how improved military cultural competency can increase the effectiveness of recruitment and employment placement for homeless female veterans. I know that we have quite a few HVRP grantees on the line today, and we look forward to your insights. I hope you'll join me in welcoming today's presenter, Risa Greenlinger from the National Center on Family Homelessness. Risa has prepared a fabulous presentation for us today. If you did not receive the presentation in my email yesterday, you can access it via our website at www.nchv.org. Again, that's www.nchv.org. If you click on the box on the right side that says NCHV Conference Calls, you'll be taken to a landing page for this teleconference. You can download the presentation from that site. I'll give you a minute to do that. While you're doing that, I'll also note that full audio and notes will be available on this page by early next week. Risa's presentation will last approximately 40 to 45 minutes today, followed by about 20 minutes of Q&A and comments. Because we have such a large gathering, and I'm sure many of you have valuable insights and questions that would benefit the whole group, please feel free to email me directly following the call, and I'll discuss your comments and questions with Risa and respond promptly to you. Both mine and Risa's contact information are on the final slide. And thank you again for joining us, and I'll go ahead and turn it over to Risa.
Thank you so much, Bailey. I'm really excited to be with all of you today, and because there's such a wide variety of people on the phone, it's one of the reasons why my presentation has appendices, and my hope is that each of you will walk away from today with something that will help you in your practice. In full disclosure, I have to say that I'm not a veteran, and although my father had a very brief Air Force service, I don't really consider myself to be military affiliated. However, I did help to create Military OneSource, and that was my drinking from a fire hose military cultural competency training. In addition, in the past, I've placed at-risk, hard-to-reach populations in employment for AmericaWorks, as well as, now I'm really dating myself, I was part of Governor Dukakis's Massachusetts Miracle, and if any of you are old enough to remember the 1988 presidential elections, then you'll understand that he was trying to distinguish his term of service, and part of what he was pointing to was Massachusetts Employment and Training Program, which was very innovative at its time. I served in one of the worst field offices, placing disabled, displaced homemakers, and other beneficiaries of government assistance in job training and job placement. And I have to say that part of the reason why I'm so excited to be with you today is that I really understand how frustrating but enormously rewarding the work of finding jobs is for people who are experiencing homelessness, and particularly for female veterans. It helps to really bring a dignity and life purpose in addition to supporting housing and supporting food security and all your other basic needs. Work is so critical, and like the Housing First movement, I'm a firm believer that, you know, while there are multiple obstacles that impact people's ability to get and keep work, it is critical to people's ability to reconnect to the success that they had in getting into the military and serving in serving our country. So this afternoon, we're going to really take a look at two aspects of how we might improve your recruitment and retention of female veterans and to help them succeed in their job placement. So I wanted to start with a quote from a real-life person because, you know, that's the best way to go. And this quote is from a Army veteran who happens to be a woman. And it basically is, you know, a way of underscoring what research tells us, which is that peer-to-peer support networks significantly enhance personal well-being and that they increase participants' sense of empowerment and confidence. And it's no wonder that veterans prefer to work with other veterans who've shared the same experience. Many organizations like Vets for Vets, Vets Prevail, and the VA's Vet Centers use this therapeutic community approach in their efforts to assist veterans in their transition back to civilian lives. And it really works because it helps to break through a stigma barrier. the National Center on Family Homelessness was lucky enough in 2010 to work with Department of Labor's Women's Bureau and to conduct listening sessions with women veterans experiencing homelessness. We were one of 10 regions, one of 4 regions that went on to do a second part following up the listening sessions. But we were doing our work in California, and the work in the other states with high concentrations of female veterans all echoed that women in particular really prefer having female practitioners assist them, particularly with health and mental health needs. And their top preference is always for a female veteran, but women are willing to extend themselves, willing to work with anyone who's willing to extend themselves to try and understand where they're coming from. However, for many agencies, it's difficult to have female veterans on staff. You may have qualified staff assisting veterans to assist veterans, but your staff members can be just civilians. But never fear, because that is why we're talking today. And it's also true that a majority of your staff may not be veterans, but you can still maintain a high retention rate in all of your programs. We're going to, in future slides, talk a little bit more about how to hire veterans and military affiliated. But another aspect of why Department of Labor, the VA, and so many other government agencies are working with grantees like yourself is that research and practice show that many veterans would prefer to go to community-based organizations because they have, and particularly women, have trepidation when it comes to working with government agencies, and women, the GAO has done a recent study showing why specifically women veterans have had negative experiences or don't see themselves as veterans, so don't access benefits from the VA to the same level as their male counterparts. So we know that as long as you and your staff environment are vet welcoming, vets will come and then they will come back. So what is vet welcoming? Well, having a staff that's got a background of understanding military culture, politics, the pressure, the experience of deployment and combat, difficulties of transitioning back to civilian roles, that's part of it. But for women, it can also be aesthetics. What does your office look like? How is it decorated? How do you create a welcoming environment? It's kind of like Cheers, and since I'm talking to you from Boston today, everybody wants to go where everyone knows your name, and that's part of what we're after, is creating that kind of comforting, welcoming effect. So the next slide focuses on, well, how do you hire staff that are military culturally competent, and how do you hire veterans specifically, and what will you gain from having either veterans on staff or military-affiliated folks on staff or an advisory group that helps you to bring that culture to your agency and to your staff. When I say military-affiliated, what I'm really referring to is somebody who is the spouse of a military member or a veteran, children of, or other extended relatives. And again, an advisory council made up of service members and veterans is another way to bring that dimension to your agency. The cultural norms that we're talking about are things that are acceptable in the military and things that are not. And, you know, it's the old adage of when in Rome, so you need to follow some of the way that people expect those working with them to be able to have like a shorthand to translate what they, where they're coming from. And there are tactics for how to create bona fides, and part of that is by really engaging in the veteran community. So whether it's groups or events or locations, creating connections, that's part of the tactics for how you can both create and maintain, because this is really a continuous process. It's not a one-time effort. We'll talk about lingo a little bit later. And military structure is often where military cultural competency training starts. However, it's enormously complicated. And even for the veterans, different service branches don't always understand one another, and that can complicate. So you're not trying to have a staff that understands the military structure and can cite it verse and chapter, or understands the differences in the way the Navy officer structure and titles are versus the Army. But it's just to have a overall sense of how our military was created, what the service branches are, and some of the cultural norms that go with each service branch. There's also, you know, sometimes barriers or unspoken barriers, and sometimes inside information that you might get from having a staff member who's a Marine or a staff member who served in the Coast Guard or the Army can be very invaluable when you as case managers are meeting to talk about the female veterans that you're trying to place. And, you know, our outside perspective as civilians is not always accurate. Media often is portraying the most dramatic human interest stories and may miss some of what daily life is really like. And there's also a difference, too, between Guard and Reserve versus those who've had military careers on active duty for a number of years. Since no agency can be all things to all people, and because your focus is primarily on finding employment, one of the most critical things is to realize that you can't be all things to all people. So one of the most valuable methods of being military culturally competent is creating a network, a continuum of care that's not necessarily your agency's, but that you're connected to, so that you have partnerships to help you address whatever barriers are facing the women as they're seeking work, but also to help bring in recruits and referrals to your program and what you're doing. It's also critical to understand where do service members and families in need go to assistance. And a little later on, we're going to talk about some innovative ways to get you free resources that you might not have right now, and to give you some insight into some cutting-edge techniques for communicating with people who may not keep their appointments with you. All right. I wanted to put in to go a little bit deeper on the difference between service branches, and I think the military core values can often inform people's approach to work. So I did want to pull out by branch some of the core values. Now, they're very consistent with one another, but there are slight differences. And if you really think about it and think about military members that you've met, you know, there is a difference between hoorah, hooya, and hua. And it all means I agree, but it reflects which service branch your veteran has served in. So that lingo does make a difference. The core values and people's indoctrination into how they see their mission and how they approach their work may reflect which service branch they've come from. There's a pressure for military members to be at peak performance and to hold oneself accountable. And there's also, you know, that real commitment to one another. And that's something that I do think that you can tap into, too, as a way of creating a peer support group that's going to help the women succeed once you've placed them in jobs. But the flip side is that there's also a real stigma to breaking down and asking for help, and this can be a conflict with what we're trying to do. So part of why we want to pay attention to military cultural competency is to have a better insight so we might understand better how to change that, and that's why later on we're going to really delve into trauma-informed care. But coming back to how do you build your staff and maintain your staff who are military culturally competent, you can see on this slide that's titled Higher Qualified Veterans and Military Affiliated Staff, that, you know, the first source is word of mouth and employee referrals. The best programs that I've seen, and there's a wonderful book called No One Need Apply that really talks about why it is human nature that we prefer to hire people who've been referred to us by those who work for us. And it's important insight even as you develop relationships with employers and hiring managers, because it's a natural thing. It's often true that people who work inside an organization or a company have a better sense of what it takes to be successful inside that company. And even for your own organization, if you're trying to build an organization where you have more veterans or military-affiliated personnel working for you, then having a formal referral program, perhaps including bonuses for successful hiring, can really help you. The rest of the slide is devoted to websites that will give you sources of where to go to hire veterans or military spouses. And the other category that's on the header that I don't want to pass over is also hiring veterans caretakers, because in many instances, your veteran may not be ready to work, but their caretaker, and for the financial stability and well-being of the overall household, may be the more work-ready member of the household, but their job placement may also require flexibility. And they, too, can be excellent hires for your own agency. So why is military cultural competency so important, and also why is it so hard for us to achieve, or even hiring veterans? Well, it's really in that first statistic. Less than 1% of Americans serve in uniform today, but bear 100% of the burden of defending our nation. That number comes from the most recently released White House report, Strengthening Military Families, that Michelle Obama and Jill Biden helped to release. And I believe the date for that was January 25th. So it's a very recent report. I've seen other numbers, that are a little less dramatic, but they range to 4% of Americans serve in uniform. So whether it's 1 or 4 or somewhere in between, you know, relatively speaking, that's not a lot of us who have served our country. And by extension, it means that your workforce is not likely to include that many veterans or military affiliated. Some other numbers that aren't on this slide, but because we're really talking about working with women, let's focus on the second to last bullet since September 9/11. More than 2 million troops have been deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan. Well, part of those troops who are deploying are women, and the number of women deployed has been rapidly growing. And when we were doing the work for the Department of Labor Women's Bureau, what we found is that women veterans are one of the fastest growing segments, that women are now 14% of the active duty, 18% of National Guard and Reserve, 20% of our new recruits. Compared to males, women in the military are 11%, or about 30,000 are single parents, and the number of single parents in the active duty forces is 4%. And in terms of the 2 million served, over 200,000 women have served in Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom, 41,000 in the Gulf War and Gulf War II. So that's quite a huge increase. And in terms of veterans, right now veterans in 2000 constituted 6% of the overall numbers of living veterans. In 2010, it was 8%, and it's projected that by 2020, women veterans will be 10% of the overall total. So how can you, aside from recruiting and having advisory boards, what are other ways for your existing staff that are civilians to become militarily, culturally competent? Well, there are free trainings, and our slide that says Educate Staff Through Free Training gives you a number of websites that you can go to. And most of these free trainings are online and take less than an hour to complete. I've done all of them myself and have really enjoyed them and gotten a lot from them. Some of them also have pull-down lists of acronyms that can be extremely useful. And on the last slide of the appendices, you'll see a reference to a toolkit that I created with the National Center on Family Homelessness through support from Walmart Foundation, and that also has a link to acronym lists. There are fee-based trainings, and Swords to Plowshare has a fee-based training called Combat to Community. The Center for Deployment Psychology has scheduled courses that are held throughout the country, and you can go to their website. And the Arizona National Guard has an interesting military immersion training. It's actually an overnight, two-day event where you stay in a military camp and you live like service members do, and it gives you more of you know, that replication of what a military life might feel like. If you want to find out about the next scheduled training, this is actually not on the slide itself, but I believe that you can contact Captain Holly Brower at 602-267-2115. And, you know, there are a variety of conferences that pop up. There's always new material coming out. So while this list is comprehensive, for both free and fee-based trainings, I'm not saying it's exhaustive, but I do feel that it's a comprehensive list. Well, coming back to the personal experience, I thought this quote from Betty that's on a slide titled, In Their Own Words, is one that's instructive. For 4 years, we did not get up from our own beds, go to work, and come home to our family. We lived, ate, and breathed Navy. And now we're being sent to someone with no idea about that, and they stick you in the welfare line. Veterans don't think they're different. We are different. And some of us don't think we're a good kind of different. Until you've lived the culture, you can't understand it. So this woman is, again, a real person who had a really difficult time when she returned from her tour of duties in the Middle East. But her comment and her attitude can be pretty common. What I hear in her comments is, you know, a pride in her commitment to service, maybe a sense of being overlooked or disregarded, or you know, a low self-image for not fitting back into society, and then maybe she's shutting herself off and pushing herself away from those who haven't served. There's a lot of conflict and frustration that people can feel, and especially if they're coming back and jobs that they expected to get or in the past that veterans had easy access to, like fire and safety, might not be available. And in our society, we're definitely an I society, but the military community is a we community. And there's a lot of transitioning that happens between the two. You know, what I take away from this quote is that she's feeling like she's not fitting in like everyone else, and she's turning away and maybe becoming more insular. She needs to go someplace where she's not going to feel like an outsider, where she can be understood, and that's why having some military cultural competency can be a great way of acknowledging people like Betty's service, but not hero-worshipping, and meeting them where they are, and helping them to see that they can have a future where they're coming from, and recognizing their current or past struggles, but rebuilding. So that's why I titled the next slide, Where the Rubber Hits the Road, because now that you know about deepening and committing to military cultural competency, where you can go for training, then it becomes an issue of, well, how do you use this to improve your effectiveness? And that's what I think is so critical as we go about our day-to-day jobs. So in that transition, it's always instructive to pay attention to what was the success that somebody had in the military. I mean, for starters, not everybody gets into the military. You know, the shooting in Tucson amply showed us that there is active screening in recruiting, because the congresswoman's the man who shot the congresswoman wasn't accepted into the military. Not everybody gets in. There is a level of pride that should be that should come with being accepted to serve in our military. And for women veterans, I said earlier that there are 20% of our recruits. Women in active duty often have the higher level of education attainment and often do very well on all the standards for acceptance in. But when they're in the military, this slide just breaks out how the distribution is across active duty employment, with 33% in lower level jobs, 43% mid-level, and 24% having highly skilled jobs. It's important to note, and this definitely comes from our conversations with female veterans, that what women veterans did in the military...
Lisa, sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to let you know that we're about halfway through at this point.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
It may not have been fulfilling for them. It might not have been a good fit. And especially with highly skilled workers, some of what they were doing may not map to the civilian world. So it's important to understand the match of what the woman is capable of doing tomorrow and what she is interested in doing. And my state and private employment placement experience shows me that employers often put a premium on actual experience versus training and education. So it may often be important that if somebody is expressing a desire for a field that they're not immediately able to go into, that you're able to give them access to training and placement that will set them up for future success. A classic example would be, you know, starting out as a paralegal and not a lawyer, but prepping to be able to become a lawyer. So as you are applying your military cultural competency, I think the biggest issues really are about first impressions, having staff that are really savvy in the intake and eligibility process, and really getting a sense, having your intake workers be able to have a sense of who's on staff and where that female veteran might fit better. And if at all possible, especially if there's strong preference to work with female staff to try and match to a woman, case manager or job placement professional. And to maintain for everyone a caring network and a professional friend relationship. And those boundaries can be very difficult to create. So I guess off the slide, the thing that might be less common sense on this slide is that for a veteran to open up and to be vulnerable, that to open up means being vulnerable to many of them. So they need to know that you trust them as much as they trust you, and that means creating a relationship which is professional but has an essence of friendship too. And that's why we call it professional friendship. It has the hallmarks and the boundaries of a professional relationship, but you have to convey the warmth and the sincerity. And that's also, you know, part of what I meant by thanking somebody for their service but not having a hero-worshipping aspect. Okay, getting the background. Really, one of the things that we found in our work with Department of Labor Women's Bureau is that, and this was anecdotal, it was not a strict research protocol, but a common denominator for women veterans who became homeless was having experienced military sexual trauma. And all of our all-volunteer force are, I don't mean to say all of them, but a large number of our all-volunteer force have already experienced trauma prior to military service. And again, being that I'm from Massachusetts, today's Globe is filled with Senator Brown's revelations that he experienced sexual molestation and trauma as a child, and he is a National Guardsman. So that could be an example of what I mean to say. But that for women female veterans experiencing homelessness, military sexual trauma was the common denominator, and military sexual trauma is very linked to having post-traumatic stress disorder, and many folks who have served overseas are coming away with mild traumatic brain injuries. And all of this is important to understand before you get into finding the right fit for a job, because it really will impact your relationship with them and how you can set them up for success. So I do have a few statistics. You know, Swan just cited that there's an increase of 11% of service members reporting being sexually assaulted in 2010 over 2009. We know that this is a problem. We know that it's underreported. 20% of female veterans who served in the global wars on terror have been diagnosed with military sexual trauma. And when you have that, 9 times are more likely to exhibit post-traumatic stress symptoms, and that leads to more problems with alcohol and drugs, lower economic and educational outcomes, and most importantly, difficulty maintaining relationships, employment, and stable housing. So the next few slides are probably more technical, and I, again, know that there's a variety of experiences from people on the phone, but you know, it's really, again, in the separation and discharge process, important for your staff to be conversant, particularly about DD-214 forms, and how to make sure that the veteran in front of you is connecting to all the benefits that they could possibly receive. And that includes understanding the different types of discharges. And an example is that a general discharge may disqualify a veteran from participation in the GI Bill and other veteran programs. So there is a significant difference between an honorable discharge and a general discharge, and that's why it's important for your staff to be conversant. It's also important, your staff are not the people who determine VA benefits, so that linkage to the VA and understanding how to connect people for resources or how to get their service history is also very important. I'd just like to turn your attention to a following slide that also is talking about separation and discharge, but the last bullet says, have them get a complete physical and dental check ASAP. Well, anybody who's ever done job placement knows that you're interviewing hiring manager or HR personnel, that dental health is really critical to that first impression and to the interview on both conscious and subconscious levels. And for your female veterans or other veterans that you're trying to place, bad teeth make people self-conscious, and they often don't smile or engage or interact in the same way that people do who do not have dental health problems. So it can be an important aspect of setting your veteran up for success in the workplace. I sort of am speeding through because I want to make sure that we really cover everything and have enough time to talk. I'm now on the slide where it's another quote. As veterans, we are strange and honorable people. We have a difficult time asking for assistance. And even when we deserve and have worked hard for the help, we tend to minimize our needs. Well, this also is a woman veteran. And then the next part of the quote, we need specific instructions and we will overdo any jobs provided to us. We're very thorough, dedicated, committed when presented with tasks. This actually, I thought, was a telling quote, and wanted to include it because I think women veterans in particular are less likely to self-identify and less likely to get the help that they may need and tend to minimize the needs even more. You know that employers are interested in hearing that military service members have teamwork ethics and training and military leadership experience that is very valuable to civilian employment. But sort of the flip side of that can be hinted at in this second part of the quote about veterans, but particularly people who may have a longer service history, needing more direction or feeling more comfortable in an environment where there's more direction. If that's the case, you may want to look at matching the person to a job that is more structured. But I thought it was the perfect segue into recruitment and retention. And these next series of slides really are meant to go back to not being all things to all people and creating a continuum of care. So when you're doing the intake and you're holistically evaluating the needs of the female veteran in front of you, that you know where to go inside your community to get them connected, but also so that you can have reciprocal referral relationships and have female veterans coming to you since they are often very difficult to reach. So some of the value of networks that I wanted to get at were both obvious and maybe not so obvious sources, including Department of Labor, Women's Bureau. There are 10 regions, and they are enormously helpful in pointing out where women are and where women go for resources.
Sorry to interrupt you again. I just want to let you know that we're about 40 minutes in.
Okay. And, of course, you know, there are local and federal and municipal relationships, too. The one other area that might be more innovative that I really want to highlight is juvenile justice. A lot of female veterans are parents, and if they're not self-identifying, many of them do have trouble with their children. And when you're working with juvenile justice, they can be a source of referring to you. And also hospital discharge social workers may be a less obvious source than you've come across, as well as Head Start and parent-teacher organizations. And the last thing that I want to say in this section really follows the RAND study where it says, where do people go for help? It's the slide that says, Vet Family Finds Resources Online, How to Get Free Visibility on the Internet. Please, if all of you out there are listening today could do one thing, I would really encourage you to go to the Google Grant AdWords application. The website is here. That will connect you to the possibility of getting from the Google Grants Foundation up to $10,000 per month worth of placement on the Internet. We all know that when female veterans are in distress and family are trying to help them or they're trying to help themselves, people do look for resources on the Internet. This is a one-time application, and if you can get your agency into this AdWorks process, you will pop up when people search on female veterans and jobs or jobs and veterans in your local area. And the other critical thing that I really wanted to share with you is I would encourage you to change your intake procedures. One thing that we found in interviewing female veterans who are homeless in California is that they really lose their computers or their ability to connect to the Internet, but the thing that most people do still retain is cell phones. And most cell phones these days come with texting, and we know that veterans, especially the women, are often reluctant to follow up and to show up in their appointments. But if you can find out if they have texting and ask for permission to connect with them, they may not return your phone call, but a text is easier and more convenient. So we've managed to not be able to go through the whole trauma-informed care, but the reason for why trauma-informed care is important is, again, the experiences that people have had coming in. And the most important thing about trauma-informed care and applying it to job placement is recognizing that the women need to, you're not going to be able to eliminate triggers that women may experience in the workplace, but you can help them and their employers to set up environments where the women feel more in control. And if you can change the lens through which you and your staff see the women that you're serving, it may help to prevent burnout, and that helps you to retain your military culturally competent workers that you've worked so hard to create. And the last thing that I want to say before we turn it open to questions in terms of the slides that I think will point you towards an important resource is towards the very end of the presentation, the slide that says Women Veterans Specific Trauma-Informed Care Resources. The Department of Labor is about to release a publication entitled Trauma-Informed Care for Women Veterans Experiencing Homelessness. And it will contain a user's manual as well as an organizational assessment to help you and all of your employees understand trauma-informed care. And then at the back of the appendices, there's some resources for where you can go for training and to better understand trauma-informed care. But I really can convey to you that if you invest in understanding trauma-informed care, it will help you to retain the women in your program, and it will help you with your placements and even in working with employers so that they're not seeing the female veterans as damaged goods, but understanding that you know, you as a good provider of qualified employees are there to supply them with workers who will meet their needs, possibly with some accommodations, but that these women will bring a lot to their workplaces. So thank you, Bailey, for the heads up. And now I'm very happy to take questions, and sorry for the Evelyn Wood beat reading version of the last half of the slide.
Thank you, Risa, and I'm sorry for rushing you through the last part of that. For everyone on the call, there are some really great resources listed in the appendix of Risa's presentation. I encourage you to please review those and let us know if you do have any questions or follow up on those. At this time, we'll go ahead and open up the floor for comments and questions. If you press star 1, you can submit your name and organization for questions, and we'll give the operator a minute to get that started. Operator, are we ready to take questions now?
Okay, and your first question comes from Tamara Williams of Employment Connection.
Hi, Tamara.
Hi. I was wondering if you could repeat the website that you were talking about to get the grant,
$10,000
for
yes.
Helping women?
It's valued of up to $10,000 per month, and what I love about this application is it isn't long. And once you apply, you do not have to continue to apply. It's self-renewing,
okay,
as long as you're using the web.
Okay.
And it's the slide that's entitled Vet Family Finds Resources Online, How to Get Free Visibility on the Internet. The Google Grants AdWords application, and the website is www.google.com/grants/detail.
www.google.com/grant/details.
And if you look through the slides, you'll find it. Please go to that. Every group that I've worked with that has applied for it, there's a high rate of success in winning it, and the results have been very dramatic.
Okay, and it's $10,000 per month.
It's valued at
$10,000
right.
per month. Okay.
But you have to have a website presence. You'll learn more about their requirements when you go online.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Tamara.
Thanks.
And once again, if you would like to ask a question, press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. And at this time, there are no further questions.
Okay. Well, I thank you so much for your participation today. And as Bailey said at the beginning of the presentation, her contact number and email is available. And please contact with her if anything else occurs to you later.
Thank you. And thank you, Risa, for the presentation. And thank you, everyone, for being here with us today. As I mentioned, the presentation from today's teleconference is currently on our website. And the audio and notes will also be posted within the next week. As Risa said, please feel free to contact me directly if you do have follow-up questions or comments. If you have any specific questions about HVRP and employment for homeless veterans, please do not hesitate to contact me. Thank you for being here, and have a great afternoon. Thanks.
Thank you. This does conclude today's conference call. You may now disconnect.